You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio, AM 740.
And welcome to the Audio Imaginarium. Come on in, weary travelers. Hang your cloak on a peg, grab a stool, and come gather around the fire. There are stories to be told, and you are among friends. I am broadcasting from my lair up in Thornhill, north of Toronto. Ian is behind the big audio board back at Zoomerplex in Liberty Village. Ryan is in his bunker in deepest, darkest East York. He's producing the live stream tonight. And my story producer, Albert, is on assignment. This hour, ask me anything. Open lines. I'll give you the phone numbers right now, and you can get on board at 416. This is the Greater Toronto Area. 416-360-0740. 416-360-0740 in the Greater Toronto Area. And toll free from just about anywhere. 1-866-740-4740. 1-866-740-4740. Coming up in the next hour, Rosemary Ellen Guiley. And you guessed it, she has another book. She is just remarkable. The last visit with Rosemary, was it in September, I think, or maybe the month before? She had a brand new book out. And this one is another Fate anthology from Fate magazine, Fate anthology, and she's compiled it, edited, and contributed some articles to this anthology. It's on UFOs and ETs. Fate presents UFOs and the ET presence. But since this will be our last visit with Rosemary before Halloween, we'll also talk about ghosts and goblins and things that go bump in the night, no doubt. And I'll also carve out some time for you to talk to Rosemary as well. Maybe you have a ghost story you'd like to share. Let's see. Let's just see if you can raise the hackles on the back of my neck with one of your ghost stories. I doubt you'll be able to scare Rosemary. I'm guessing she's pretty much inured to that kind of thing, I would think, but you never know. Now, speaking of ghosts, three in five people, believe they have come face to face with a ghost at some point in their lifetime. And as well as seeing a ghost in real life, 40% of people think their pets have had a ghostly encounter. But people's way of dealing with meeting a ghost aren't far from those in the movies. The typical reactions tend to be fainting, screaming, crying, or running away. I would probably do all four. Women, despite being more likely to see a ghost by 20%, did you get that? Women are 20% more likely to see a ghost. They're also twice as likely to scream and run away. This was a study conducted by OnePoll, all one word, on behalf of Groupon. I wonder why Groupon would be doing this. They also found that 1 in 3 people believe their house is haunted. 1 in 3. So we can talk ghost stories if you'd like, and we'll also pick that up with Rosemary in hour two. Now I see that creepy clowns are back in the news. Creepy clown reports. This time in Great Britain, there was an incident with a knife-wielding clown over there recently menacing some children. And I'm wondering if this has all been inspired, if you will, by Stephen King's book, It, which came out over 30 years ago. And then, of course, there was the original It movie, which came out in 1990, and then there was the reboot of It, which I think came out last year. Which is scarier, by the by? Which is scarier, the book, the 1990 movie, or the 2017 movie? I've not read the book, nor have I seen the movies, but that might be kind of fun. Why don't we kick that around as well? The scariest movies ever made. The scariest movies ever made. For me, it was actually a trailer, not even the movie. It was 1966. It was a cult classic B movie called The Queen of Blood. Has anyone out there seen that? I haven't actually seen the movie. As I say, I only saw the trailer, and that was enough. This was, who was in that? Basil Rathbone, I think. And young Dennis Hopper and John Saxon and Forrest J. Ackerman, who, of course, went on to publish a very famous magazine called Famous Monsters of Filmland, which first started publishing in the late 50s. And Famous Monsters of Filmland inspired countless Hollywood directors, not only in the horror genre, like people like John Carpenter, but people like Steven Spielberg as well. Were very inspired. Anyway, Forrest J. Ackerman made an appearance in The Queen of Blood. And then there was this lovely Czech actress named Florence Marley. And she played the alien queen, who also happened to be a vampire. And as I say, I saw the trailer. My parents, back in, I think, about 1967, 68, I was 3 or 4 years old. If they wanted to go to the movies, they had to take us being 5 children with them, usually. Try getting a babysitter for 5 kids. Not that easy. So on this particular night, we piled into the family station wagon, a 1962 Valiant, and my mom and dad went. They wanted to see, it was a Debbie Reynolds, Dick Van Dyke movie called Divorce American Style. I don't know if you remember it. So we went to the Breezes Drive-In in Brantford, or it might have been the Sunset, but I think it was the Breezes Drive-In. And we had a padded, kind of a foam pad in the very back of the station wagon. It was covered with some nice terry cloth, and we piled in there with our pajamas. How exciting was that when you were a child, right? You were going out into the car after dark with your pajamas on. So me and my 4 older siblings piled into the Valiant. Off we went to the Breezes Drive-In, and we were sort of expected just to kind of fall asleep in the back while my mom and dad watched Divorce American Style. Not an inappropriate movie, but not of particular interest to a 4-year-old. But before I fell asleep, of course, they ran the trailers before the main feature, and there it was, The Queen of Blood. And as I say, I've never seen the movie. I'm sure if I did, I would laugh about it now because it looks like it's pretty campy. But for a 3 or 4-year-old, this alien vampire in outer space, I tell you. Florence Marley, in her alien queen getup, would haunt my nightmares for the next 25 years. So that was it for me. And later I watched the pilot for a TV series called The Night Stalker. This was the pilot that aired, I think it was like an ABC or NBC night premiere. Anyway, it was like a Monday or Tuesday night, and this was The Night Stalker. The pilot episode was about this vampire that was stalking Las Vegas, and I tell you, that was it for me. I was, I think, maybe 8 or 9 years old, 7 or 8 years old maybe, and so my scariest moments on screen actually weren't even films. One was a movie trailer, and the other was a made-for-TV movie, a pilot episode. So maybe we can share your scariest movies as well. Now, we could go in a completely different direction. If you'd like, we could talk geopolitics. I know the disappearance of Jamal Khashoggi is on everyone's mind. And Turkey is saying that a Saudi hit team is behind his disappearance and murder, and that much of his interrogation and torture and murder was recorded on his Apple Watch and uploaded to iCloud, and may have been overheard by his fiance, who was apparently waiting outside the consulate in Istanbul in their car. She waited out there something like 10 or 11 hours, then came back the next day. And of course, he's completely vanished. And this has far-reaching geopolitical implications. And we can get into that as well. 416-360-0740 in the GTA. 416-360-0740. And toll free from just about anywhere. 1-866-740-4740. Let me try that again. 1-866-740-4740. Now, I want to also, because I've neglected this, and I hope you'll all forgive me, all of you in the live chat. It's been a while since I've acknowledged you, and I apologize for that. But I just, it's been a while actually since we've had the live stream. We did it last week, and then before that, it had been a while. But I just wanted to say and acknowledge some of you who join us in the live chat at the YouTube channel. Brown Dwarf. Now here's one, Charmaine Lotriette. I hope I'm not mispronouncing that. And Charmaine is checking in from South Africa, where it's almost, well, it's after 5 in the morning. So Charmaine, great to hear from you. Thank you. And let's see. We have George Barry in Omaha, Nebraska. Who else do we have? Gianni Marmerstein. Hello, Gianni. Kenny Poison in Colorado Springs. Red Cap Goblin, let's see, Raz2, checking in from the UK. Gord Oland, Gord joins us every week. You Betcha joins us every week. Great to hear from, or to see both of you. Luna is beautiful this evening. Sorry, that's from VC. Who's Luna? Not sure. Oh, VC in the Carolinas. Let's see, who else do we have? Gang of Four, Baji Kimran. Hello, Baji. All right. I'll try to, John Schwartz. Hello to all of you. Great to have you on the YouTube live chat. Incidentally, please check out the YouTube live channel. And if you haven't already, please hit that red sub button. Ryan, back in East York in the bunker, I think, what are we, around 11,400 subs. So let's see how quickly we can get that up to 12,000. And just a reminder, my podcasts, of course, Conspiracy Unlimited. New episodes drop every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And you can go to conspiracyunlimitedpodcast.com. conspiracyunlimitedpodcast.com to listen and subscribe. And don't forget about the Rock and Roll Twilight Zone. If you love rock and roll and the paranormal and unsolved mysteries and so forth, the Rock and Roll Twilight Zone, new episodes drop every Wednesday. And you can just Google it, or you can go to strangeplanet.ca, strangeplanet.ca, and you can access it from there. And speaking of the website, we are updating it. You may notice if you go to the homepage, we've kind of streamlined it and changed that, put a new coat of paint on the old website. And the actual radio page, the page for the conspiracy show, that is going to be updated, streamlined, modernized, and made far more mobile friendly in the days and weeks ahead. So if you haven't already done so, check out strangeplanet.ca. One more announcement before we head into a break, and that is a live event that I'm hosting Saturday, October the 20th. Saturday, October the 20th, the discoverer of reverse speech, David John Oates, he's coming to Toronto actually for 3 dates, the 18th, 19th, and 20th of October. But I'll be hosting on Saturday, October the 20th. You'll get to meet David John Oates. I'll be there. He's going to try and solve the JFK case using reverse speech. You can meet him and learn about this remarkable discovery, reverse speech, hear it firsthand. And also, well, this is happening at the Greek Orthodox Church, Metamorphosis Greek Orthodox Church in Toronto, 40 Donlands Avenue. 40 Donlands Avenue, right across from the Donlands subway station in Toronto. And October 18th and 19th, it's 7 to 9 p.m., $10 at the door. That's October 19th, sorry, 18th and 19th. That's 7 to 9 p.m., $10 at the door. And then on the 20th, Saturday, October 20th, I'll be hosting, and that is $15 at the door, 2 to 5 p.m. Hope to see you there. For more information, go to reversespeech.com. This is a presentation of Crime and Trauma Scene Cleaners. New sponsors. Glad to have them aboard. All right, open lines. When we come back, The Conspiracy Show. My name is Richard Serrett.
When you look at the sky, ever wonder if someone's looking back? This is The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio. To speak with Richard live, call 416-360-0740 or toll free at 1-866-740-4740. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Curiosity, or did the devil make you do it? Whatever the reason, welcome back to The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio. To talk to Richard, call 416-360-0740 or toll free at 1-866-740-4740.
All right, welcome back indeed. And this hour, open lines, ask me anything. And let's see, we are going to start with, I believe we have, is it Ray? Rob. Rob is in Scarborough. Rob, good evening. Hi. Welcome to The Conspiracy Show. How are you, my friend?
I'm okay, Richard. How are you?
Terrific. Thank you.
I love your show.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. Anyway, I had Twittered you a few years ago about getting what I thought was hit by an energy weapon on the beach in Toronto.
You thought you were getting hit by an energy weapon?
I absolutely was, you know, as far as I'm concerned, was hit by an energy weapon. I was knocked over. I was rollerblading. And I had tweeted you about this, and you had answered me and asked me how I was. I ended up getting surgery because of it.
Oh, wow. So this would have been, so you're rollerblading, this is along the boardwalk, is this like Kew Gardens?
Yeah, along the concrete. However, there was no one there. It was early in the morning, and there was a police SWAT unit, and this was around when the G20 was happening, so they were, I guess, testing their weapons. I don't know. And I mean, this is The Conspiracy Show, so I have no proof. However, I'm a good skater. I felt like I was hit with a 6x6 piece of wood, and I was knocked flat right out, and ended up with surgery on my neck because of it, and I still have nerve damage to this day.
So, did you hear anything before you went down?
Nothing. It was just so quick. And then when I was in pain, it was, you know, calling for someone, I looked up and they were gone. There was no one around, and the police, you know, the thing was gone. It was gone.
Did you black out?
For a second or two, I did. Yes. Mm. It was.
Did anyone come to your
last thing? Pardon me.
Right. Did anyone come to your assistance?
No. I laid there for about 15 minutes, got up, and walked my bike back home, and then went to the doc. They found out that I had some. It was a form of whiplash.
Sure.
Yeah.
So what do you think it might have been? Some sort of a microwave weapon?
I really couldn't say. I mean, I heard about the G20 and the weapons that they had apparently on hand. You know, there was the sound weapon, but I knew, you know, I could just tell that they had other things also.
Right, the sound cannon.
Because of the characters that were involved with the G20.
Mm.
And I don't mean the people on the street. I mean, you know, the powers that be, so to speak.
Now, was there anyone else around you? Because that type of weapon, these are sort of non-lethal weapons, supposedly, although I'm sure you don't look at it that way.
I mean,
They're somewhat indiscriminate, one would think, at this point. So if there were other people around, you would think they would have been knocked over as well. But there was no one around at the time.
There was no one around. It was early in the morning. Very early in the morning. And I also wanted to ask you, how do you decompress all of this information that you get in your head? I mean, I'm a bit of a conspiracy theorist myself, and I just, you know, I listen to your show, and at the end of the night, I have to decompress. I can't imagine how you do it throughout the years.
Well, I think I've made this point a number of times. I don't consider, even though it's called the conspiracy show, I don't consider myself to be a conspiracy theorist. I certainly think a number of conspiracies have a great deal of validity, mm-hmm. others not so much. But the key for me has always been to compartmentalize. I don't live it.
Right.
I talk about it for a living, but I don't live it. I mean, I'm interested in it, but it doesn't consume my waking hours. I have, you know, a lot of other things that sort of keep me busy throughout the day, throughout the week. So that's the key. I had a colleague in this town who not only talked about it, but he lived it. Mm-hmm. And he walked the walk and he talked the talk. And if he, when we worked at the same radio station, if he were to, I won't say corner me, that sounds unkind, but if we were to meet at the coffee urn and he would start to talk, there was no getting away from him. You basically kissed off 20 minutes of your workday because he was so consumed by it. And I just made a decision at a very, very early on when I started down this path, I wasn't going to let it consume me, and I wouldn't deal with it except primarily when I'm preparing for the show and when I'm on air. So that's pretty much it. All right. Listen, Rob, I hope you're fully on the mend. I know you still have some nerve damage, but thank you for sharing that. And I appreciate you calling in from Scarborough.
Thank you. Have a good night.
You too. All right. We're going to go to my hometown, Brantford, Ontario, on the beautiful Grand River. Hunter. Hello, Hunter. Welcome.
Good evening, Richard.
How are you?
Oh, not too bad. I'm kind of looking for help with something that I want to see fly if I can. Since the beginning of the summer, I've been trying to get, how do I put this? I'm trying to get a line to the federal liberals about a suggestion that I have for to solve their pipeline problem. And I just can't get any cooperation from anybody. You know, you think I was trying to smuggle an atom bomb through the back door or something. It's just insane.
Well, maybe you should try going across the floor and try the conservatives. Maybe they might be a little more open to it. And who knows? They may be forming the next government in about 1 year's time.
I don't know. I've got a bad taste in my mouth from things from the past with that. I really don't want to go in that direction if I can help it.
You don't want to go in the conservative direction if you can help it?
No, not at all.
Well, what if they end up forming the next government?
I mean, I don't even know. I don't really want to think about it, and I don't even know what to say about that. I'm really hoping that's not the case. But I think that trying to solve the problem from the end, I'm trying to take it from right now, is more important than that. I don't see why I'm getting that kind of reaction from everyone.
You're not sure why you're not being listened to? I mean, is that a rhetorical question?
It's insane.
Is that a rhetorical? Well, no. I mean, that's pretty much how it goes, isn't it? Once they get in power, they're not really interested in listening to us. But I'll tell you one thing about the pipeline. I think it's ridiculous. Here we are in 2018. The fact that our energy resources, we have something like 100 times U.S. oil in the ground, 100 times. We should be an energy superpower. The fact that we do not have a pipeline stretching from the West Coast to the East Coast, to me, is just mind-boggling. I mean, I don't care who's in power. The fact, you know, that they can't get that done, it should have been done 50 years ago. I just think it's a joke. It's a joke. Anyway, good luck. Just keep hammering on that door. Maybe someone will answer. Look, great to hear from you, Hunter.
Is there any way that, I mean, if you were to come across someone that could possibly steer me in some direction that you could get a hold of me? Because it's just been in my head, and my idea is so simple. If I can get it across and we're actually viable, then it might save a lot of people a lot of headaches.
Well, have you tried your MP?
Yeah, but I actually know our MP down here. I went to high school with him, but he's conservative.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, what did he think of your idea?
Oh, I haven't let the cat out of the bag. I don't want to do that. I don't want somebody else. If it actually were to fly, I don't want anybody else taking help me out with the word I'm looking for from
credit.
Yeah. I don't want that to happen.
Well, Hunter, all I can say, I mean, I have no other, I don't have any secret, remedies for you. You just got to try all the regular channels. Try all the regular channels. All right, good luck with that. Keith is in Mississauga, wants to share a scary story. Hey, Keith.
How are you?
Terrific. How are you?
Not too bad for an old fella. My story goes way back to preteens when I lived in Ottawa. And before you were 16, you had to get somebody to buy your ticket after 6 o'clock in the evening, 6 p.m. And at the Center Theater on Spark Street, they were playing The Mummy's Tomb. And I got a person to buy my ticket, and I think it was a quarter. We'll say a quarter. And then you could hide in the theater and from the ushers and all that. But you saved your shoes by putting clips on them at that time. You didn't buy new shoes. Money was short. So what you did was put a clip on it and take them to the shoe store and get a clip on it. And my mother said when I got to Albert Street and Lyon Street, where I lived on Lyon and Laurier, she could hear me running down the street with my clips.
Because you were so scared.
Yeah.
Now, who was in The Mummy's Tomb?
I ran like a deer. I could run like a deer.
Who was in that movie?
Oh, Boris Karloff, I believe.
Oh, of course.
Yeah,
of course.
Boris Karloff. He was the first monster back in the 40s, wasn't he?
He played Frankenstein's
the
monster.
Cowboy that was the bad guy in some of the westerns. He became, he was in a couple of times. He was in once or twice, but I think I remember Boris Karloff.
Boris Karloff, Lon Chaney, of course,
yeah,
Lon Chaney Jr., who played the Wolfman, and Bela Lugosi, all the greats.
Yeah.
All the greats from back in the 30s and 40s.
Oh,
now, you know, it's funny, when you look back at those movies, they seem so innocent and so charming, and now what do we have? We have these gory, horrific slash-em-type movies.
Yeah.
I hope we can get back to those old charming horror films again.
The guy that played the mummy was the first guy I remember was the guy that played Stony Brook in the B-Westerns.
Ah, yes. Right,
and,
right.
And that was him. But another scary movie, and I think it was between the 60s and the 70s, it was the first one that came out. They made a second one later on, was the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah, that just never did it for me, those types of movies. And that one wasn't, anywhere near as gory as some of the ones that are out today. But, old Leatherface certainly was a...
I don't know if that was based on
haunting a lot of people.
That was a scary movie. Because
certainly it was.
Whenever you think of it, it could happen.
It probably has. Listen, Keith, great to hear from you. Thanks for checking in from Mississauga. We'll come back more. Ask me anything. Open lines on The Conspiracy Show, 416-360-0740. Toll free from out of town, 1-866-740-4740.
Keeping an eye on the New World Order. This is The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio. To speak with Richard, call 416-360-0740 or toll free 1-866-740-4740. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. The truth is not out there. It's right here. The Conspiracy Show with Richard Sarrett from Zoomer Radio.
Rosemary Ellen Guiley will join us in the second hour. She has a new book, Fate Presents, UFOs and the ET Presence, but we'll also talk about ghosts and goblins and things that go bump in the night. And we'll carve out some time for you to speak to Rosemary as well. Right now, we continue on with Open Lines. Ask me anything. Let's go to Toronto and say hi to Mary. Hello, Mary. You are on the air.
Hello.
Hi there.
I have actually seen a ghost in
you
my
have.
Own apartment. And the apartment was an unusual one because it was on two floors. And
Sorry, Mary, you cut out there. Try that again.
The apartment was an unusual one in that it was on two floors.
Okay.
And there was sort of like a little corner nook, and I had a fern plant in there. And I decided, oh, I'm going to bed. And directly across from the fern plant on the other side of the room, I had a little nightlight that I had on in the living room. I walked halfway over to the light, and I don't know why. Something said, turn around. And I turned around, and I saw the shoulders down to about the knees. I think I would say it was a monk because of the robe he had on, and it was a dark brown, and it was tied in the middle with a white rope.
That sounds like a monk.
Yeah, I don't know whether it'd be an abbot or a monk, but I'm assuming it was a monk.
Right.
And I looked at it, and I thought, what the heck? You know, I went over, and I turned out the light, and I went on upstairs, and I went to bed. Now, somebody said to me, weren't you frightened? And I said, no, for the simple reason, if it had been there all this time, it would have certainly done something before now. But I've never seen it again. Just
was this a full-on apparition, head to toe, or was it somewhat transparent? What did it look like?
It was absolutely, no, it's just from the neck down to the knees. There was nothing underneath it to show the head, legs, or feet, or anything on the floor. I never saw a head.
Interesting.
But I saw the hands, how they folded into their sleeves.
Yes.
The hands were folded into the sleeves, and it had this white rope with a crucifix hanging down.
And that was the one and only time you saw it.
One and only time.
And did you ever investigate the history of this apartment building? Was it sitting on a monastery or a church or something?
No, I'm right downtown Toronto, right in Cabbage Town. So I don't know where or how or what. As I say, it was a one-time thing. And
what do you think of this poll that came out? Groupon sponsored a poll. Mm-hmm. 3 in 5 people believe they have come face to face with a ghost at some point in their lifetime. 3 in 5.
I do believe that.
That's 60%. That's the majority of us. 60%.
And I do think there's something out there, and what it is, I don't know. But I do think there is something out there. I really do believe a lot of things happen simply out of coincidence, but there are other things that just can't be explained.
Right, right.
So
I was speaking with Jim Elvidge, who has been with me many times. He has a new book out. He'll be on the Conspiracy Show in the next couple of weeks. He wrote a book called Digital Consciousness, and this isn't his new novel idea, but he certainly believes there's a possibility that we are living in a computer simulation, that what we think is reality is, in fact, it's a simulation. It's digital.
Yeah.
And this may explain a lot of paranormal activity. There's nothing paranormal about it. It's just sort of the blending together. Like in a video game,
a glitch.
A glitch, exactly. I was just going to say, in a video game, you get a glitch occasionally, and this might explain what that is.
But that also goes like to, that's just another way, I think, of saying that there's another dimension we certainly are not aware of.
Well, I think most theoretical physicists would agree with you that there are at least 12, last count, at least 12 hyperdimensions.
Yeah.
Now, the question is, what inhabits those dimensions?
And do we really want to know?
Part of me does.
Yes.
Part of me does.
I'm curious enough to want to know, but also I think wise enough to stay as far back as I can.
You got that right. Mary, did you have a scary movie you wanted to mention?
Yes, I did. It was a movie that I saw as a child. It was called The Haunting of Hill House.
Oh, yes.
And it was in black and white with Julie Harris was in it, Russ Tamlin, Claire Bloom. And the funny thing about this, it came on Sunday night at 9 o'clock when they used to have Sunday night movies at that time. And I got through the first part of it, and I went upstairs, and I woke my brother up because we were home alone, and I was the oldest. I woke my brother up and made him come down and watch it with me. So
right.
Sitting on the living room floor, he was lying just across in front of me, and we're watching this. Then when a commercial break came on again, he went upstairs and got my younger sister, woke her up, brought her down. She was sitting behind me, and there's this one part where this a door in the wall opens, and you see a face. And it's really just a human face, but you see it. My sister almost ripped the skin off of the back of me because frightened her so bad. We all gave up after that. We never really saw the end of the movie, but I actually have it on a DVD, and you never see what was really haunting.
Right. They were very clever that way back in the day when they made movies. It was more suspenseful. Like you say, you never actually saw the monster you didn't have to see the gore and the blood. That's all sort of gone by the boards, unfortunately, that kind of movie making. But
The Haunting of Hill House.
Yes. And that was about a team of investigators who went to this house, correct? Paranormal investigators, right. There was a remake, I think, with Liam Neeson, if memory serves.
Yeah, but it wasn't as good.
Listen, Mary, great to hear from you. I got to run. We got a break. Well, thank you. We'll come back. More open lines on The Conspiracy Show.
If you're sure your phone isn't tapped, call now. 416-360-0740. Or toll free at 1-866-740-4740. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. You want the truth? You can handle the truth. The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio. To get the truth, call Richard now at 416-360-0740 or toll free at 1-866-740-4740.
Welcome back. Let's say hi to Melanie. Melanie, welcome to The Conspiracy Show. Where are you calling from?
The Creemore area.
Beautiful Creemore.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I love that beer. I got to be honest.
Yes, it's nice. Free samples. The best. Anyways,
all right. What do you have for us, Melanie?
I have more stories than I could probably fill in a book. But you just kind of think it's normal. I've had stuff happen since I was in my 20s. So this particular story in the High Park area when I used to live there, and I guess my son, who was 4, had seen things, and he was kind of a shy kid, and he'd kind of bury his head in my. We'd be watching TV and kind of bury his head, and I'd say, what's going on? He kept looking in the dining room. And I'd say, what's going on? And he says, well, I see a shadow boy, which is interesting. And I'd say, well, tell him to go away, and that's fine. Well, the next day, of course, it's daylight, and this is after I think my husband had passed, and I have stories from before that, but this is just a particular one. You don't expect a 4-year-old to talk about people in the dining room, and he'd say, they're spacemen, Mom, they're spacemen, and they're in the dining room. So I'd say, well, tell them to go away, because I couldn't see them, and so he'd say, no, and he was afraid, he'd hide behind me. So I'd say, go away, spacemen, and then he'd hide behind me, and he'd say, Mom, they're not listening to you. One's got a knife, and he's hitting the other one, and he's going into the floor.
Oh, now, dear.
A very, you must, you know, weird.
You must have been, were you frightened at this point when he's talking
no,
like this?
No, because I've had things happen in my life, and I just thought, well, he's just maybe over-imagining something, or the kids had let him see a Star Trek show or something, I don't know. I questioned them, and they said, no, he doesn't see any scary shows when we're alone with him or whatever. But other things had happened in the house, and I'd had experiences myself, and I didn't really much want to even stay in that house anymore. So I'm telling you, there was one particular story, and I think it was after that point, and I'd wanted to move out of the house, and my husband had passed away from cancer not too long before, a few months before. And I was so tired after, you know, taking care of him, and he'd had issues where he was seeing things before he died, and he was very lucid, not on any drugs or anything like that,
right.
But he was seeing people in his room, and he would describe who they were and what they were doing, and it was freaky, and it was freaky for him because he would be afraid, and I'd say, well, you know, we're going to have to start putting something on the wall saying in the name of Jesus, you know, or whatever. And I'm not particularly a religious person, but very spiritual. Anyways, he did pass, and I had been thinking about moving up to the Creemore area. And I guess I'm resting. It's the evening. I'd gone to bed, and I'm resting there. And, you know, you're thinking about what you're going to do the next day and laying there very comfortably. And all of a sudden, something shoves, and I mean shoves, one leg into the other. I mean, my knees banged. And I thought, okay, it's going to be one of those nights. Because I'd had issues before where you get a little push or something.
Right.
So I laid on my side, and I thought, I'm just going to ignore that. And then I get a shove right in the shoulder, pushing me. And I thought, it's not your imagination. I mean, you know when you're getting pushed. And when the leg goes bang to the other leg, you think, well, did I just jerk or something like that?
Right,
you know,
right.
Or almost going to sleep. But I wasn't. So I'm laying there on my side thinking, I'm going to ignore this. And I'm laying there on my pillow when I realize the pillow next to me, and which I'm not touching, is going right up on its end, where it was almost touching my nose. And I just sat up, got the lights on, and I didn't sleep all night. And I never slept in that room until we moved after that. So that's one particular story. But I have a million. I mean, I've had things fly off shelves for no reason and whatever. And I moved up north to a really lovely old home, and I thought, well, I'll have it kind of blessed or cleared or whatever. I didn't want any issues with certain energies. And
what did you use? Sage or sweetgrass or what did you do?
No, I just had a little old lady that used to do clearing and energy work, and she was an ordained minister and whatever. And
did it help?
Well, I was moving into this new house, so I didn't really have an issue with the new house, but I wanted to make sure it wasn't going to be like the old house.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
And
right.
As I say, I can tell you stories about things appearing out of nowhere also, but that's other stories. So this particular house is a beautiful old house, 140 years old, and my grandmother had passed. This is just one particular story in this house. I never felt anything untoward in this home. I love this home. And one particular night, I'm doing research because I'm I work in real estate. Anyways, doing some research to see what my grandmother's house might be worth, and I piled up all my MLS listings on the left side of the bed. It's a great big queen bed, and I put it on the floor in a pile, a nice neat pile. And my son that night had decided he was going to sleep in the hallway outside my room because that's where the air conditioner was, and it's a big old house and it's hot upstairs. So I thought, that's fine. My door is shut. And I wake up thinking I hear footsteps in the hall. And I thought, well, he's not up, is he? So I thought, no, just go back to sleep. It's nothing. And a few, maybe 10, 20 minutes later, I wake up again. I hear footsteps. And I'm thinking, well, I'm not a very good mom if I don't get up and see what's going on.
Right, right.
So he, I can hear him. He's a heavy breather. He's a mouth breather. He's only like 8 at the time. He's on his sleeping bag. And he's kind of snoring, you know, and I thought, well, it's it's not him, I don't think. So I went down the hall, looked around, and I looked back up the hall, and I thought, well, I'm going to creep back, and I'm going to kind of stand around him and see, is there a creak of the floor if I'm standing where he's laying and he's been rolling around or something? And it wasn't, I couldn't identify it. Well, I go back into my bedroom, and, you know, I'd just gotten out of the bed on the right side of the bed, thrown all the covers back, and stepped onto the, you know, to the right side of the bed and around to get out to the hall to see him. Well, when I came back into the room, I went, you know, didn't turn any lights on. I went to go crawl back in bed, and my MLS papers are all over my bed. And
oh,
I'm strewn
wow.
all over my bed. So it's like, okay, pick them all up, put them neat. And I said, well, okay, acknowledge, you know, somebody's presence. You know, you can leave me alone now. And that's one particular story. I have another one. And as I said, my husband had passed years before, and I wasn't here. Well, maybe a year or so. And I thought, okay, I have a stepsister who's going to come over and do a wall mural for me. And I thought I might as well tidy everything up. So I had made my bed, and I put my shams up and a special two little pillows that I have. And I have a little teddy bear that I used to call Danny Bear after my husband. Anyways, he never liked that bear. But anyways, I thought, well, I'm going to set the shams up, and then I'm going to set the two white pillows up, and I'm going to put Danny Bear in the middle. Bed's all neat, nice big comforter, you know, like a thick duvet. And I went into my son's room, and I said, you know, you have to get up. He's about five. I said, you have to get up and make your bed. I said, you know, my stepsister's coming, and you got to have the room neat. I want to show her the house. Well, that's fine. I thought, oh, darn, I forgot something off my night table. So I got stuff in my arms and whatever, but I'm going back into the room to pick something off my night table, and I thought, what's this? Something strange. My Danny Bear was at the bottom of the bed. The pillows were strewn around the bed, and there was an impression in the duvet, like of a body. I just thought, okay, Dan, if it's you, you could have at least waited until I came back to bed. Anyways, that's all I said. You know, I mean, what can you do? There's stuff that goes on.
You're very nonchalant about it.
Well, I have to be, because I've had things happen. I mean, this is not a black and white world, is it?
No, indeed. Listen, Mary, those are, Melanie, my apologies. Those are amazing stories.
Oh, my God.
And
but anyway,
you are so sincere, and I believe you definitely experienced something. Thank you for sharing. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I hope you'll call again sometime. Melanie up in Creemore. Let's say hi to Baji in Ohio. Hello, Baji.
Hello, Richard. I wanted to ask you a question. I want to know if you think that the world will ever come to an end, and if so, will it be because of disease, famine, bad governments? And if so, could it happen very soon?
Well, I mean, I do believe in the Bible. I do believe there will be, you know, an end times, but not the end of the planet, not the end of humanity, just the end of, you know, the present order, if you will. That'll come to an end. I don't, is it very close? That's impossible. I don't like to get into a guessing game. Every other week there's somebody claiming the end is nigh, and they've been doing that for, well, probably since the Middle Ages. No, you know what? I'm actually quite positive about the future, at least the immediate future, let's say the next couple of 100 years. I think technology, although I have to say I am a little concerned about artificial intelligence. If we can get a handle on that, I think we'll be okay. But I think ultimately technology is going to solve most of the world's major problems. So I'm kind of bullish on the future. To be honest with you, that's not to say at some point, you know, again, as a Bible believing Christian, there will be an end times. There will be a tribulation. There will be an Armageddon. There will be a second coming. But that's, you know, me talking from the pulpit. But I hope that answers your question. How about you?
You know, I think it'll happen, but I'm having a hard time deciphering if I think it's soon or not. The Bible talks about when Israel would be reestablished as a nation. It was sort of usher in the end times, but that has been 70 years, and 70 years is a long time. And so while I see it happening, I'm not sure if it's going to happen soon.
Well, we're supposed to behave like it's imminent. That's the main thing, right? We have to prepare.
True.
Baji, thank you. Great to hear
nice
from you.
Nice talking to you.
Baji in Ohio. All right, let's say hi to, do we have time to squeeze in one? Oh, I don't think we do. Ian, back in studio, do we have time? Probably not. Well, there's the music. That answers that question. All right. Rosemary Ellen Guiley joins me next. She joins us next to talk UFOs and ETs and a ghost story or two, I'm sure. The Conspiracy Show. Back with more in a moment. Don't go away.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Live from Toronto, Canada, Earth, The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett on Zoomer Radio.
Thanks for inviting me into your home, long-haul truck, RV, camper, taxi, your parents' basement, your loft, that greasy spoon just off the interstate, and your cabin in the woods. Hello to all of you listening in on our flagship station, Zoomer Radio, AM 740 and 96.7 FM here in Toronto. How do to all of you checking us out on one of our affiliate stations across North America. And for a complete list of affiliates, go to strangeplanet.ca, then find the Conspiracy Radio Program page, and right up in the top corner, you'll see affiliates. Just click on that. Howdy to those of you listening via the Conspiracy Show app and the Zoomer Radio app, both free downloads. Hi to those who listen and watch on the live YouTube stream. And again, please visit our YouTube channel and hit the red sub button. And of course, hello to all of our regulars who join us in the live chat, wherever and however you're listening. I bid thee the warmest of welcomes, and I thank you for your fine company. All right, we are going to talk UFOs, we're going to talk ghosts, and we're going to open up the lines and make them available to you as well. Rosemary Ellen Guiley is here for the full hour. She's a best-selling author, researcher, investigator in the paranormal, metaphysical, and related fields, including afterlife studies, spirit communication, cryptids, alien contact, and the interdimensional aspects of our extraordinary experience. She has more than 65 books published on a wide range of topics, including 9 single-volume encyclopedias and reference works. Her work is translated into 17 languages, and she has worked full-time in the field since 1983. Let me just give you a sampling of some of her work. Haunted by the Things You Love, Ouija Gone Wild, Dreamwork for Visionary Living, Black Mirror Scrying, Calling Upon Angels, The Zozo Phenomenon, Demon Haunted, True Stories from the John Zaffis Vault, The Road to Strange, Werewolves and Dogmen, Guide to Psychic Protection, and more recently, another Fate magazine anthology on the afterlife. And her latest is another Fate anthology. This is Fate Presents UFOs and the ET Presence. The website, visionaryliving.com, visionaryliving.com. Rosemary Ellen Guiley, welcome back to The Conspiracy Show. Hello.
Hi there, Richard. Always a pleasure.
Indeed it is. It's been a while since you've written a book about UFOs, hasn't it?
Well, actually, I had a book, The Road to Strange, UFOs, Aliens, and High Strangeness, which came out in January.
That's
these
right,
two books
yes.
mark my first books in the UFO field. I've written about UFOs in books, and I've done articles, but I'd never done dedicated books to the topic. And I'm very pleased to bring both of them out. The Road to Strange has been a big hit. It landed on the Amazon category bestseller list, and the Fate anthology, UFOs and the ET Presence, just came out about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and is the first of several volumes dedicated to UFOs. Fate magazine published more on UFOs than any other topic in its entire history, and there's just a wealth of material.
And they just recently celebrated their 70th anniversary, did they not?
Let's see, that would be, yes, because the magazine was launched in 1948. on the heels of Kenneth Arnold's historic sighting of the flying disc over Mount Rainier in 1947, which is credited with launching the modern UFO era. And
yes.
Over the course of time, experts in all the fields of the paranormal, Fortean research, cryptids, UFOs, metaphysics, afterlife research, leading experts have written for Fate, and more than 1,000 articles are in the vault. Now, I've been associated with Fate in various capacities since the early 90s. I started out as a writer, then a columnist, then a consulting editor. Now I'm executive editor. And one of the things that I wanted to do was provide a new showcase for this treasure of information that is still relevant today. The articles have historical significance. They contain information that is just as applicable today as it was whenever the article was written. And this is a good way to get Fate introduced to a new audience, including people who have been subscribers over the years.
Well, just let me just read from the table of contents to give people a sense of who wrote articles about UFOs for Fate, and these are included in the anthology. Rosemary Ellen Guiley has compiled, edited, and contributed some articles. But we mentioned Kenneth Arnold. There's an article in there from Kenneth Arnold. There's one from John Keel, of course, from the Mothman Prophecies. John Keel has written at least one article. J. Allen Hynek has an article. Brad Steiger, of course, who we just lost recently. Now, I notice here Alan Spraggett, which is interesting because Alan Spraggett was a Toronto broadcaster who I believe at one time had a late night show at CFRB where I toiled for many years. Let me see, who else? We have Kevin Randall, of course, and Paula Harris. I mean, this is just Ingo Swann, for crying out loud, on remote viewing UFOs and extraterrestrials. This is really a veritable who's who, some real heavyweights. All of these people have contributed articles. I wanted to ask you about an article that you submitted, and this has to do with why science should investigate the evidence for ET visitation. And I just wanted to give you a few minutes to just to kind of recap that article and make your case for any scientists out there that are listening.
Well, of course, various experts have made the pitch that science should be paid more attention to UFOs, and I'm also in excellent company in this anthology because J. Allen Hynek has a piece to that effect as well. And as you know, before we get to my piece, Hynek started out as a skeptic, as a debunker, working for Project Sign and Project Blue Book for the Air Force, looking at cases and collecting evidence, and became a convert himself. And so what we ran in Fate was a letter that he sent to Science Magazine saying, you know, scientists really have the wrong take on UFOs when they say that people are mistaken, they're hallucinating, they're crackpots and things like that. Well, years later, I interviewed some people who had just published an article about ET visitation. Is it possible for ETs to visit Earth? And I interviewed James Deardorff, Hal Puthoff, and Bruce Maccabee about their opinions about science and the ET visitation question. You know, is there a logical explanation for ETs traveling a great distance to be able to visit Earth? And personally, I think a lot of them are coming from interdimensional areas, not extraterrestrial responses. But it's a Q&A, and they talk about how polarized opinions are in science about ufology, and that really hasn't changed over the years, despite the anecdotal evidence that has piled up, the eyewitness accounts, even declassified documents from the government. Science still remains very polarized over the question of whether or not we're being visited, and even if we are being visited, how we're being visited, how it's possible. So it was kind of an eye-opening interview Q&A with these gentlemen who are all big names in the field in science, and some of their candid replies about the ridicule factor in ufology, and that crops up over and over again. I just spoke at the Western Connecticut UFO conference yesterday, Richard, and my talk drew upon this book and On the Road to Strange and some other of the work that I've done about strange cases and how do we explain them when the rules of logic don't apply. And the eyewitnesses who are routinely called crackpots, or they were supposedly drunk, or they imagine things. In other words, they've got a problem, and so therefore their experience needs to be dismissed out of hand. It just goes on, and it's mind-boggling.
Indeed it is. The one of the conundrums, I think, for a scientist is, I mean, how do you even approach this topic? Because again, it just, I mean, you've done an excellent job in sifting through almost 800, 800 issues, I think, that the FATE has published since over the last 70 years. So, I mean, I don't know how long this took you to compile all of these and find these jewels that you've included in the anthology. But when you look down the table of contents, I mean, it illustrates perfectly how complicated this whole issue is. You've got a Nazi component. There's an article in there about the Nazis and UFOs. You've got cryptids with the Mothman, and people also report Bigfoot sightings in conjunction with UFOs. You've got Ingo Swann talking about remote viewing, and a number of people have talked about the psychic connection between ETs and themselves and so forth. It's just so complicated. I don't even know how we begin to study this thing from a scientific point of view.
Well, it is rather daunting. And one of the things that Maccabee Deardorff and Puthoff addressed in the interview piece that I did with them was the extraterrestrial hypothesis. And that really took center stage in early ufology. It hasn't gone away by any means, but the extraterrestrial hypothesis, in other words, how do we explain scientifically these visitations? Because the assumption was made that we're being visited by beings from other worlds that are at a great distance from us. So how do they travel essentially, maybe even millions of light years?
Exactly. Rosemary, I've got to jump in here. Pardon the interruption. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back and we'll get back to that alien hypothesis. Rosemary Ellen Guiley has compiled, edited, and contributed to a FATE magazine anthology on UFOs called FATE Presents UFOs and the ET Presence. Back with more in a moment.
You're listening to The Conspiracy Show with Richard Sarrett from Zoomer Radio. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Sarrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Where there's smoke, there's The Conspiracy Show with Richard Sarrett from Zoomer Radio.
Welcome back. Rosemary Ellen Guiley is with us, and her new project is an anthology from Fate Magazine. Fate Presents UFOs and the ET Presence. She has compiled, edited, and contributed articles to this anthology. And we were talking about the alien hypothesis and how to explain how, if we are being visited by extraterrestrial civilizations, how they could arrive here on this planet from vast, unimaginable distances, perhaps hundreds of thousands of light years away.
And this has been a real stumbling block in ufology for a long time. I really think the extraterrestrial hypothesis should be set aside and that we concentrate on looking for other explanations. Now, in the interview I did, Hal Puthoff opined that perhaps we might get somewhere with SETI, the search for extraterrestrial intelligence. But the legs have been cut out from under that. It's lost a lot of funding, and there just wasn't a continued initiative along those lines. More likely, most of our experiences are interdimensional rather than extraterrestrial, and we might be able to find explanations for that with the new physics, with quantum physics, rather than, looking at things conventionally. Do aliens travel in a craft? And so, therefore, how fast do they need to go? And do they find wormholes? I believe that these beings that we're calling extraterrestrials, many of them don't come from other planets. They come from parallel universes and dimensions that are very close to the one we're living in. And we're looking at situations where there are gaps in the interdimensional boundaries, and we have these breakthroughs when we have visitations, and that applies to other things as well. It certainly could apply to mysterious creatures, for example, and even ghosts and hauntings.
Yes, you've often talked about how there is probably underneath all of these paranormal, supernatural experiences, including the UFO phenomena, there is probably a common denominator.
Well, the common denominator, I think, is consciousness. And there is something that requires a triggering of something in our consciousness for us to have these experiences. And when we look at the patterns of experiences in individuals, there are people who have more frequent experiences and more dramatic experiences than others. And that certainly applies in ufology. People who have frequent sightings of craft, or they're targeted for abductions, and then other people who don't seem to have any sort of experiences, even sightings of mysterious lights in the sky. And research, has been indication that the government in the U.S. has been conducting research for a long time on the psychic factor, looking for genetic markers for certain psychic traits that indicate a predisposition to having certain kinds of experiences, including the UFO experience, and that this marker might be enhanced through literally through breeding, and that they have found volunteers to have their DNA tested for these certain markers. They seem to run in families. Not much is known about these programs. I did a column. I have an occasional column on onstellar.com called UFO Underground, and I did report on that earlier in the spring, and I think some other ufologists have also reported on it as well. And this could be the path that secretly agencies, government agencies, are really pursuing in trying to understand the whole visitation question. Maybe there's even a distraction given to the public for us to continue to think on one level that they're still flying around in physical craft, when in fact it's an interdimensional, even beyond linear time kind of experience that's closely connected to human states of consciousness.
Well, that's interesting. And you mentioned that maybe, you know, we have to stop thinking about them as being these mechanical, physical craft, which leads me actually to a chapter from Brad Steiger that's included in the anthology, Are UFOs Alive? What is that about? What is he? What did Brad Steiger, the late great Brad Steiger, mean when he asked that question? Are UFOs alive?
Well, there are two articles on that. John White also did an article on living UFOs based on the work of Trevor James Constable, who was probably the first person in the field, and Steiger references him, and also another man, Faye Clark, who was very influential upon Steiger and his thinking, that what we're looking at in the sky are not hard craft like an automobile might be or an airplane, but living organisms that can exist in our atmosphere, and that they're intelligent and sentient, and they have the capability of shape-shifting and morphing as well. And interestingly, there, you know how fiction, and science fiction especially, sometimes precedes what science does and what popular thinking turns to. And in 1913, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, who everybody knows from the Sherlock Holmes mysteries,
yes,
he also wrote on vampires and a lot of other phenomena, but he published a story called The Horror of the Heights, in which he describes living organisms in the sky that were very similar to what Trevor James Constable was talking about. And here's a work of fiction. And I do believe that fiction writers often get an idea from maybe the great Sargasso Sea out there of things that wind up being documented by researchers as physical fact much later on. But Steiger also was interested in that, about or at least some of these things that we're calling craft. Are they living organisms, and might this be why we don't have the nuts and bolts that so many ufologists have looked for?
Well, Jesse Marcel Sr. thought he was handling some of the nuts and bolts of a downcraft, which brings us to, of course, you can't have an anthology about UFOs without talking about Roswell. And there's an interesting article submitted by Kevin Randall, about an interview he did with Phil Kaufman, who was stationed at Roswell, I guess Army Air Field, and may have borne witness to the actual crash at least one flying saucer at near Roswell, and then perhaps also was involved in the retrieval. Can you kind of walk us through the chapter and the discussion with Phil Kaufman?
Well, it's an interesting case because, as Kevin Randall puts it, you know, this might be like the last witness to Roswell. And yes, we do have evidence of physical craft. So, you know, my feeling is that we can't categorize UFOs as all of one thing or another. The fact that they seem to be so elusive might point to an interdimensional consciousness, perhaps morphing living organism sort of thing, but then we do have evidence of physical craft as well. Well, Kaufman was in the Air Force and was stationed at Roswell, and he said that at the time of the incident, this craft, this unknown craft, registered on radar and was tracked as it kind of looped around in the sky. And when it exploded on crashing, it sent off an incredible burst of EMF energy, electromagnetic energy, and that the craft came down in what's now known as the Hubcorn Farm private property, which was not the site that so many researchers believe that the debris was actually located. And I did actually go to the Hubcorn site myself some years ago. And he said that that he was one of the ones who went out there, and he said the craft was triangular in shape with rounded corners. It was about 15 to 20 feet wide at the widest part. and there was a dead alien sitting propped up against a rock a short distance away from the craft, and he was very unsettled by it. This was it was diminutive, with humanoid in appearance. It had a head larger than a human head, and in its death pose, it had a very serene look on its face, like it had just found the ultimate peace. And there was something about the expression on this alien's face that just unsettled him greatly. And that the bodies were all taken away, and the debris, of course, were all taken away. Well, Kevin Randall did quite a bit of research around Kaufman's story, and he did cover some inconsistencies that Kaufman changed some details in his story from time to time, and that a lot of it could not be corroborated. But nonetheless, it's another piece of important eyewitness account around one of the greatest mysteries in ufology.
Of course, Kaufman passed away in 2001. So as you say, perhaps one of the last witnesses, and now even the children of the witnesses at Roswell are getting on. So as Don Schmidt likes to say, we are really in a race against the Undertaker. At this point, I don't know that we'll ever find out definitively what happened at Roswell. Do you?
Probably not. And even as documents get declassified, it's still a selective declassification. And I think that we're allowed to know what government agencies want us to know in many of these cases. And we may never find out the real truth. We have compelling testimony from people who say they witnessed at least pieces of what went on. And there's really no way to prove or disprove their testimony. The idea that we have had alien crashes certainly is plausible, that if there are beings in physical craft visiting, there would be accidents, just like we have air accidents. And are these completely cleaned up by government agencies? That's the big question.
There's also an interview with Dr. Jacques Vallée included in the anthology. And it's interesting because he has sort of reemerged on the scene after, I'm not sure how long, maybe a decade away. He started showing up occasionally at UFO conferences again. Tell me a little bit about the Vallée interview that's in the anthology.
Well, one interesting thing about Vallée is that he did evolve, or I should say he has. He has evolved in his views about UFOs. And, for example, he was an early critic of John Keel's, and Keel came out with a lot of really radical ideas in the early 70s in books like Operation Trojan Horse and Disneyland of the Gods, arguing against the extraterrestrial hypothesis that what we're really dealing with is an interdimensional phenomenon, and that alien beings are tapping into our consciousness and they're playing around with us. And
right.
Keel took a very dark view on this, and for that he was roundly criticized as a crackpot by ufologists, and Vallée was one of his critics. And then within a couple of decades, Vallée came around to a lot of the same viewpoints, that
right.
There is an alien intelligence that is able to interact with us in ways that the extraterrestrial hypothesis can't explain.
And he wrote a book called Messengers of Deception.
People are not stupid. You know, they know what they see, and science should pay more attention to what the eyewitnesses are describing. And, Hynek went through a similar evolution of thinking, and I think it's good to point that out, because there are researchers in the field who get wedded to a viewpoint, and they stick to that viewpoint no matter what evidence is discovered, and then look for, you know, increasingly ridiculous ways to stick to that viewpoint, when in fact we really do need to be able to change our theories and our opinions as the evidence advances.
Right. You mentioned John Keel, and he came to believe that there was sort of a sinister agenda. And you mentioned that Dr. Vallée sort of came around to that way of thinking because he wrote a book called Messengers of Deception. And I don't know where Dr. Vallée is right now in his thinking. Does he still believe that? Do you know that there may be kind of a sinister agenda with ETs?
Well, as far as I know, I don't think we've heard much from him recently, but that was the evolution of his thinking, and you know, he examined a lot of the abduction cases. We really didn't have a whole lot of literature on the abduction cases until the 70s and 80s, even though abduction cases were taking place before that. Just look at the Tujunga Canyon cases from the 50s in Los Angeles and in Brazil. And I have Scott Corrales documenting the Brazilian cases, including the Vias Boas case, which was very famous. Some researchers have come to that conclusion about the deception end of it, that the way these encounters take place and the way human beings are kind of played with and manipulated led to think certain things about the aliens, that there may be a lot of deception going on. Keel's opinion was that, hey, there's nothing we can do about it. There's a cosmic trickster at work, and we're just victims of it. We'll never really know the answers. And I think we will know the answers at some point.
All right, We'll take a time out here, Rosemary. Stay with us. Fate Magazine presents UFOs and the ET Presence. Back with more of The Conspiracy Show. Don't go away.
This is no place for the naive or the faint-hearted. The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. The truth is not out there. It's right here. The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio.
Hey, welcome back. Hey, incidentally, if you want to help support the show, we are now on Patreon. So check out our page on Patreon, patreon.com, and just search The Conspiracy Show. Rosemary Ellen Guiley stays with us, and we'll continue to talk about UFOs, but we should also touch on other areas, aspects of the paranormal. We are approaching Halloween, of course, and we won't get a chance to speak with Rosemary before Halloween. Incidentally, what's happening this year with you in Halloween? Do you have a big paranormal conference or a big investigation going on?
Well, every year I go to Salem, very close to Halloween, and I'm there for a number of events. I do my big Black Mirror scrying event the weekend before Halloween, and we do the balls. Joe and I are part of a crew for a Dumb Supper event, which is a meal for honoring the dead. So we're there for almost a week. And then on Halloween night itself, I'm going to participate in the Ghost to Ghost special on Coast to Coast.
That's a classic. And have you had any unusual experiences at Salem over the years?
Salem is quite haunted. And I did a book called Haunted Salem where I spent a great deal of time there and investigated a lot of the haunted spots. And there's a lot of residual phenomena, which I have experienced, that really goes back to the old witchcraft trials from 1692. And the remnants of that are still in town. I think there was such an emotional intensity around that witch craze. And the 200 or so people who were arrested and accused of witchcraft, and the 19 who were executed and lost their lives, it really left a psychic scar on the town. And the ghosts of some of those victims are still about in the restaurants and shops. The main part of Salem has underground tunnels that connect a lot of the shops, and those tunnels are haunted. And some of the outlying areas around town are as well. So it's always a spooky experience to go to Salem at any time of the year, but then when you've got the Halloween season and the folklore about the veil between the worlds being the thinnest, and so much attention focused upon the dead, it really adds a lot of collective energy that helps to amplify the phenomena.
So that is true, that on Halloween, the veil that separates this world from the nether world or the other side is at its thinnest. Does that mean that spirit communication, you're more likely to have success with, let's say, a Ouija board or some sort of divination on Halloween?
Well, traditionally, the belief is yes. And this goes back a long ways to Celtic festivals, the Celtic festival of Samhain, which is what Halloween is today. It was end of the season harvest festival. And there were beliefs centuries ago that at this time there's a shift in the boundaries, in the veil, and that the dead are able to come into the world of the living. And so all of these customs arose for dealing with the spirits who had kind of a night out on the town, so to speak. And there would be rituals to placate the dead, to communicate with the dead, give food offerings, and wear disguises so that spirits could be tricked and that they wouldn't follow you home, for example. And these customs have survived in many ways over the years. They've become our trick-or-treating customs that evolved over rituals of going to ask for food for the dead, and our parties and other rituals for honoring the dead at this time originally were intended to keep the dead at bay, you know, that they would be in the world of the living during this time, but they would want to be encouraged to go back to their world at the end of it. And today, we have a lot of rituals for communicating with the dead through seances and with various devices, including the Ouija board, rituals to honor the dead, like the Dumb Supper, which is one of my favorites. And then the Black Mirror event that I do is using black mirrors for the purpose of contacting the dead. And people do have communication. They do make contact. And for many people, it's a surprise. They might try it because they're a little on the skeptical side. They just want to see what happens. And for other people, they really come seeking contact because they want to convey a message or get a message or have some kind of closure.
How does Black Mirror scrying work?
It's a piece of glass that's painted or coated black on the reverse side, and so it becomes a dully reflecting mirror. It's shiny, and it will reflect things, not as well as a silvered mirror, but when it's positioned properly in dim light, it becomes like a blank slate, like a chalkboard. And when you gaze into it in dim light, that fatigues the physical eyes, and the black mirror then takes on a consciousness-altering a property of becoming like a doorway to the astral plane or the other world, a bridge world where we can solicit communication with the dead. And this also goes back to ancient times when the Greeks used shiny surfaces to contact the spirit world and to withdraw into dark places for the same purpose as well.
All right, Rosemary, I've got to take a time out. We'll come back. We'll continue to touch on that, some more UFO topics as well. We'll also open up the phone lines, questions, comments for Rosemary Ellen Guiley, 416-360-0740, 1-866-740-4740.
When in doubt, blame the government. You're listening to The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. When you look at the sky, ever wonder if someone's looking back? This is The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio. To speak with Richard live, call 416-360-0740. Or toll free at 1-866-740-4740.
And we are back with Rosemary Ellen Guiley, the website visionaryliving.com. Visionaryliving.com. Her new project is an anthology, Fate Presents UFOs and the ET Presence. I want to get back to that in a moment, but I want to finish up our discussion on divination. We were talking Halloween and Black Mirror scrying. Have you had any success with this technique?
I have, indeed, Richard. I've used black mirrors for a good number of years. They're very good for strengthening psychic ability, for sharpening up clairvoyance. They can be used for other purposes besides contacting the dead. You can contact spirit guides, even angels. You can use them for divination of the future, look into the past. They've been used for past life regression. I've had paranormal groups take them out on investigations. They've been used in seances, and I've used them in seances too for mediumistic kinds of communication. So I've had quite a bit of success with them throughout the years, and Joe, my husband, and I have conducted many workshops all over the country. Next year we're doing Black Mirror workshops in England as well. And we've witnessed people having astounding experiences with the mirrors. Some people don't, at least right at first. I think a lot of it depends on how willing you are to suspend disbelief and go with your experience. Some people analyze and, they have a tendency to dismiss things as imagination when, in fact, it's their psychic faculty taking over. People will see things in the mirror. They will hear voices, feel touched. We've had apparitions manifest in the room while people are mirror gazing. And all kinds of things can happen. We actually had a pet manifest for the very first time in one of our sessions that we did in Michigan this summer. And at the end, we invite people to share their experiences. And a woman described in great detail and very emotionally how she had seen a very beautiful field setting, and she was reunited with two of her pet dogs who had passed over. And it was a very emotional experience for her. Well, the woman next to her had an experience while she was gazing into the mirror, she saw in the room a small dog dart under this woman's chair and then disappear. And we figured that this was a manifestation of one of the pets that she, this other woman, had connected with in the mirror scrying.
Hmm. Let's go to the calls and say hi to Joey in Arkansas. Joey, good morning. Welcome to The Conspiracy Show.
Hi, good morning, Richard. I've really enjoyed the show and the guests. Rosemary, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing well, thank you. It's the busy season.
Yes, ma'am. It is. I have a question about something earlier you talked about, the UFOs. I remember, I think it was around 2001, was probably the latest, there was a UFO discovered on a beach that had, I don't know if they said it washed ashore or, but it had hieroglyphics on the side of it. And I remember seeing it when it came out from sources on the internet, but it's been since been removed from the internet. I can't find any pictures on it, and I wondered if you had any knowledge about that particular discovery for the hoax, or what your opinion on that was.
Can you be a little more specific? Where did it wash ashore?
Oh man, Richard, I can't remember. It was a tropical island. I do know that. I don't know.
Does that sound familiar, Rosemary?
It was in.
Nothing on a tropical isle is coming to mind. I don't know what case that would be, but there are other cases where people have recovered debris from alleged crashes, and or they've witnessed something being taken away, like the Kecksburg case in Pennsylvania back in the 60s, where an object crashed into a lake. And people said they saw kind of a cone-shaped object under a tarp being carted away by the military. So there is physical evidence out there, as well as the evidence that at least some of these craft do seem to be more shape-shifting in nature, and perhaps other contactees and witnesses have also talked about their impressions that these craft are at least in part living organisms as well. But I'm sorry, I don't know the exact case you're referring to.
Yeah, we need some more details. If you can remember any other details, get back to us, Joey, or even send me an email or a text. You can email me at richardserrett1@gmail.com, and then if we have some more details, then maybe we may be able to to answer the question a little better. But thank you for checking in from Arkansas. Well, speaking of physical evidence, there is, and you dedicate a chapter of about this in the anthology Fate Presents UFOs and the ET Presence, and that has to do with angel hair or something that looks like almost like a cobweb, as if these crafts are ejecting something out of the craft. Talk to me about angel hair. This goes back to the 1950s. It seemed to be kind of a hot period for this discussion on angel hair, because we don't hear an awful lot about it now.
Well, we certainly don't, and it seems that ufology goes through waves of things, which is quite interesting in and of itself, with different characteristics holding forth for a while and then morphing into something else. This article was done by Ray Palmer, who was one of the co-founders with Curtis Fuller of Fate magazine. And the angel hair is kind of a wispy, white substance that has been or was found on the ground, for example, after there'd been UFO activity. Some of it was even collected and chemically analyzed. In one case, Palmer talks about an analysis that showed the substance to be organic, and that it could be dissolved in hydrochloric acid, and that it had inflammable characteristics as well. And there were speculations that, well, this wasn't really coming from UFOs. It was probably, you know, the debunker and the skeptic side of it. It was kind of like silky kinds of threads that we find in milkweed that floats around, cottonwood, and things like that. But this angel hair was a commonly reported characteristic for some years, and then just kind of literally vanished. I mean, we rarely hear about angel hair anymore. And his speculation was, are UFOs ejecting something from the
right.
craft? Could this be like perhaps waste that they might dispel into the atmosphere? It was also described...
He also made the suggestion that it could be like chaff, which is sometimes ejected by fighter planes. During World War II, it was used in other eras to confuse radar.
That's right, yes, and maybe it would have that property as well. There were some descriptions of it as more foam-like rather than silky thread, that there seemed to be some variations in these substances, there was one case from 1957 where this foam-like substance was actually touched and that it had kind of a numbing effect. And nobody ever was able to ascertain exactly what this angel hair range of substances, exactly what they exactly were and what their purpose was. I did like the explanation about the radar, something to confuse radar that our own terrestrial craft had used, and that, who knows, maybe the alien craft were trying to throw us off their trail with the ejection of angel hair. But then that raises the question, if it was some sort of effective thing for aliens to eject, back then, what changes occurred that it rarely happens anymore?
Well, that was 60 years ago. I mean, who knows? We evolve, perhaps so too have they. Maybe their technology is just better now. They don't need that anymore.
Well, it could be, and I also think it's because we've made some shifts in consciousness, and there has been more of an inquiry now on the nature of human consciousness and the fact that these experiences may take place in alternate realities. They're not physical experiences on Earth in 3D reality, but a lot of these contact experiences and sightings involve these alternate realities.
Rosemary, how do people get a copy of Fate Presents UFOs and the ET Presence?
It is available on Amazon and in select bookstores right now. The ebook will be coming out next week.
Fantastic. And again, the website is visionaryliving.com. Rosemary, until next month, you have a terrific Halloween.
Well, you stay out of trouble, Richard.
No danger at this point that I'm going to get into any kind of trouble. All the best, Rosemary. Thank you.
Thank you, Richard. Good night.
Good night. All right. Back next week with a brand new program. In the meantime, don't be afraid. There is nothing concealed that won't be revealed, and nothing hidden that won't be made known. What you hear in the dark, speak in the light. And what I say in a whisper, proclaim from the housetops. Move over, Aphrodite. I'm coming upstairs. Good night.